duties, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt addressed the nation through a series of radio broadcasts known as the Fireside Chats. His aim was to reassure the common man that our society would recover from its troubled times. But we're far from 1930, and I deal with a different kind of far. For a new era of worldly frustration, we offer a fresh conversation. I'm Greg Carlwood, and these are the Fireside Chats.
Welcome to another episode of THC, folks. Smoking a little smoke, drinking a little drink. From San Diego, I'm Greg Carlwood, and today we're going to zero in on the Catholic Church's role in the big conspiracy. When you look at the values of the Catholic Church, you should see peace, love, and equality, reaching out to feed the poor, house the shelterless. You should see active campaigning to end the wars and reject consumerism. They should promote healthy living, nutrition, meditation, and harmony. Instead, when you look at the real members of the Catholic hierarchy, the Pope is living in a golden palace big enough to house thousands of suffering people on the streets. He wears Prada shoes with big rings and a jewel-encrusted hat, while the most notable action of its clergy in recent years is the systematic molestation and abuse of children and the shuffling around of those accused of such actions. Besides soliciting money and leading a weekly ritual indoctrination, they do very little else or anything to promote the values they preach about. With news of the Pope's resignation, I contacted a man who's been leading the charge against such corruption, ex-minister of the United Church of Canada, Kevin Arnett. He's been a front-runner in exposing the terrible acts and abuse of the Native people of Canada in the making of his film, Unrepentant. Kevin, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Greg. Thanks for having me.
Hey, it's a real pleasure. And with all the things happening right now, I'm sure your time is in high demand. So thanks for spending the hour with us. I really do appreciate that.
It's a pleasure.
And if you wouldn't mind, tell the people about how you got started on this course. What led up to the making of Unrepentant?
Well, you know, it's been 20 years. 20 years ago, last summer, I went to the West Coast, where I'm still living, on Vancouver Island. And I just was a newly ordained Protestant clergyman. I just did what I thought a minister was to do, which is to open this church to everybody. And there's a real color bar still in Canada. Indians and whites don't often mix. And so I started bringing Indians into the church, and I began to hear these stories of how so many of them died in the boarding schools run by both the Catholic and the Protestant churches out here right to 1996. I mean, the stories were horrible, and I was told at the time to ignore them all. You know, the church wasn't being sued at that point, so they could afford to ignore everything. But eventually, I helped to bring up this truth. I let people who had witnessed killings in these schools speak from my pulpit. I tried to force the church to take a stand on it, and in return, I got fired for it, driven right out of the church and my livelihood, and saw my family break up over it, a lot of bad personal cost. But in so doing, I won a lot more credibility among Native people. They began to share more stuff with me. And over the years, we've built up a whole movement that finally forced the Canadian government to acknowledge that, you know, a lot of children died. According to their own statistics, half these kids never came back. We're talking tens of thousands of children who died.
Wow.
You know, in a system that was also run in the United States. So more and more over the years, we realized that this was happening in many countries, that the common denominator was the Roman Catholic Church, which set up a lot of these schools. And we've taken it all the way now to Rome. And as you know, if you people go to our website, itccs.org, they can see how big this thing is becoming now that, you know, people all over the world are speaking out finally about how this has cost the lives of millions of people. And I think the mask has really slipped. People see the Vatican and these churches for what they are.
Absolutely. And the ITCCS, how did that form? That's the International Tribunal into Crimes of Church and State.
Yeah, it started about 3 years ago. I was in Ireland speaking. I was invited to a number of places in Europe to give talks because of what I've been doing for years in Canada with the survivors of these crimes. And in Ireland, some people suggested that, well, you know, we're dealing with an international corporation here called the Vatican. It's time that the victims got organized across borders. And we set up the tribunal first to investigate these crimes and then finally to start to take legal action. And we began to work with lawyers in various countries, including in New York, the Center for Constitutional Rights there. And we began to put together a legal body, common law court, which has actually brought in a verdict already against 30, we call them the Dirty 30, these top church and government officials, including the Pope and a bunch of cardinals, who had a direct role in ordering the cover-up of these crimes, you know, murder and rape all over the world. So we're really happy that we're finally getting this out, and it's reaching, seems to be reaching more of a critical mass of awareness.
Yeah, I mean, we find ourselves in strange times, being stuck inside the American bubble with a state-run media who is deeply in bed with any traditional organization of power. It's tough to really know what's going on, other than the Pope has decided to resign from his post, something that hasn't happened in 600 years, and apparently has never happened outside of wartime. But we've learned to watch world events very carefully because there's almost always an alternative story, and that seems to be definitely the case here. I mean, is the Pope's resignation in direct relation to the pressure from the ITCCS?
Oh, absolutely. You know, to give you an example of that, there isn't just our court action. There's the International Criminal Court is bringing a charge against Ratzinger as a German citizen. It's brought by a number of groups in America that we worked with. We provided evidence to legal groups in Europe and even governments to act on this. And so, you know, we're very convinced that because of that, and also all the court cases, you know, the Mahoney case in L.A., the jailing of the first Catholic bishop in U.S. history, the William Lynn case in Philadelphia last year, all of this stuff hitting the press, you know, it's just so enormous that they can't hide anymore. And, you know, the numbers, people are voting with their feet. In Austria alone last year, which is one of the most conservative Catholic countries in Europe besides Ireland, 30,000 people left the Catholic Church. And so, you know, we're going to see the snowball more and more.
Yeah, I mean, isn't the Queen of England is named in this case as well, am I right?
Yeah, well, she has a direct role, of course. She's the head of in this colonial system we live on in Canada. She's still the head of state. But also she is the head of the Church of England, which was one of the main churches that set up these death camps they call residential schools. We even found letters from the Archbishop of Canterbury referred to by people in the Anglican Church in Canada ordering cover-ups of mass graves of kids across Canada. So, you know, the Crown of England is directly implicated in a lot of this stuff as well as the Vatican.
Man, it seems like they're under so many different charges from so many different people. But the one that you're involved in, I guess there was what exactly happened? There was a guilty verdict reached and they're supposed to respond by March 4th, correct?
Right. Well, this is a group of citizen jurors, volunteers from all over the world, and 33 of them, after a month of deliberation and looking at all the evidence about genocide in Canada, they came up with a verdict, found the parties guilty, and sends them to 25 years in prison, which is normal under international law when heads of state are involved in war crimes. That's a normal sentence. Usually life imprisonment is more likely. But it also ordered that these people lose their property and assets. So, in other words, when you think about it, every church in the world is, you know, especially America and Canada, places
right.
like, all supported with taxpayers' money. They're public institutions, yet they operate as private criminal bodies, laws unto themselves, where they can legally rape children and get away with it. So what we say is, these are supported by the public. Public should have the right to go in there and seize that property and wealth if it's not being used in the way it should be. You know, under the income tax laws, they should lose their charitable tax exemptions because they are committing crimes. And there's no way that taxpayers should subsidize that. So we're saying this is bigger than just the arrest of a few people. We want to disestablish the power of these churches to do these crimes in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, I am completely on board with that. I'm sure this audience would agree that the Catholic Church is really just a front organization for power-hungry criminals. When will the Pope and the Queen of England actually, you know, be arrested or start to have to confront this stuff? Or is this going to get swept under the rug like so many other things we see?
Well, you know, they've got a lot of worldly power on their side, but even that's collapsing. You notice the Queen was supposed to be in Rome today, and she canceled her visit under this bogus story about having a stomach ailment. She's afraid to leave the country because, like Bush or Cheney, they know that they can face a citizen arrest under international law for committing crimes against humanity. So, and, you know, the Pope is hiding out. The Vatican has said they're going to protect him, even though there's arrest warrants out for him now through the International Criminal Court and our court. So, yeah, whether or not we're able to immediately detain these people isn't, you know, people are going to try. There's other people involved, too. The Prime Minister of Canada, heads of the churches in Canada, you know, representatives like that. And even there was the head of Weyerhaeuser Company. I don't know if you know. Weyerhaeuser is one of the biggest logging companies in the world. It's based in Seattle. And we've got solid evidence that they were involved in actually grabbing native land illegally in Vancouver Island and helping to commit genocide there. You know, the head of Daniel Fulton, the head of Weyerhaeuser, is being named as well. So people, eco-activists in Seattle are going to try to perform a citizen's arrest on him as well. So this stuff is, it's a one-year warrant. It was issued, if people go to itccs.org, just yesterday, the citizen arrest warrant was posted there. You can read it. It gives anyone the authorization to go over the next year and arrest these people, detain them as citizens, knowing that these people represent a threat to the children and others in our communities. You know, when the police and the courts don't act, citizens have the right to do that, and this is what we're asserting.
Yeah, let's actually talk about Unrepentant a little bit. It is a great eye-opener. I had no idea this was going on. It seems like people in the movie are telling their experiences under the care of these Catholic institutions. Kids are getting electrically charged needles stuck in their brains, stuck in their penises. You know, really shocking stuff. No pun intended.
No. It's really horrible. And as a matter of fact, we proved over the years of documenting this, we've got the movie Unrepentant, first of all, can be found at a website, hiddennolonger.com. And at hiddennolonger.com, you see not only the film Unrepentant, but all of the documentation I've acquired over 20 years. It's got 273 eyewitnesses who were in residential schools. It's got documents from the government showing a death rate of over 50% because they take healthy kids, put them in the same dorms as kids dying of tuberculosis and smallpox, and then never treating anybody. There was just germ warfare to kill off lots of kids, especially in the West, when they wanted to open the area for white settlement. And it was a killing ground in these schools. And we documented that every definition of genocide under the UN Convention on Genocide happened in Indian boarding schools, both in Canada and America. We're talking sterilization programs, killing off children, creating long-term conditions where they die off, breaking up families. All of that's genocide under international law. Canada's guilty of it, proven, and yet not one person's ever gone to jail here for the death of one of these 50,000 children who never came back. You know, and the numbers are even higher in America. So, you know, we're dealing with definite crimes against humanity.
Right. And they seem to operate under a different set of rules. They seem to be above the law. I mean, I remember a time when someone rushed Dick Cheney on a stage and tried to claim citizen's arrest. And, you know, the arrest of the Pope and the Queen of England, along with the seizure of Vatican assets, I'm sure that seems a little too large of an operation to believe for some people. Are you planning to face resistance from the establishment? I mean, do you think the Pope's going to get asylum on the Vatican grounds?
Well, he's got asylum, but don't forget, these people rule through appearance and fear. It's really a bubble, and as soon as you puncture it, you'll see that they're just people. Under international law, anyone, including a head of state, can go to trial for being involved in or even covering up crimes against humanity, which both the Pope and the Queen have done. The Pope signed letters to American bishops ordering them to protect child rapists in the clergy. He did the same to the bishops in Ireland just 3 years ago. And so don't forget that we're also, I don't think I mentioned this, but we're contacting the police in these countries, in Canada, America, England, and Italy. And we've announced them that, you know, open and above board, we've announced our intention. We've asked for their help in detaining these people. And if the police don't help us, they're betraying their oath of office, and we can legally ignore them. So, we're asking the police to be on the right side of justice here. And I'll tell you, we put this to the test. When we occupied churches in Vancouver, the police used to show up and threaten us. We just said, look, you're protecting child rapists here, and we hand them information. They, at that point, they usually go away, or they just avoid confronting us because they know we're in the right. So that's a very powerful thing for people to realize, that kind of citizen power when you stand on what's right and lawful.
And then that's great, because traditionally police are not very responsive. I mean, during the Occupy protests in general last year, you know, you saw police beating and macing kids when really they're just trying to stand up to injustices, and they're getting met by the police, which now seems to be a private security force for the powers that be.
Right.
It's a damn shame, but it's good that they're, you know, you're actually able to break through to them a little bit. But how did the United States get off the hook here? I mean, you got the Queen, Prime Minister of Canada, the Pope. I mean, obviously the United States has got to be involved to some extent.
Heavily involved. And, you know, this is just the first case in the docket. You know, this case had to do with genocide in Canada. Future cases involve specifically the Vatican and the way these acts of genocide occurred in America, too. So I just want to urge listeners to realize that I'm going to be more active in the States. As a matter of fact, in April and then again in July, I'm doing speaking tours on the East Coast and then right across to the West Coast. I'm supposed to be in California in July. And I would love to give public talks and meet with people that help organize groups to work on this.
Absolutely. Do you have anything planned for the LA area or San Diego?
We do, yeah. It'll be, don't have a date in July yet, but I've been invited to both places. And, you know, we can talk more about that and plan some stuff.
Absolutely. You know, keep me posted because I will let the audience know. I mean, people seem to be hungry for some kind of justice with all kinds of power structures. And it's great to see something happening. I mean, I've been hearing you talk about this for a while, and there are other people in the conspiracy community, for lack of a better term, that talk about justice coming, and, you know, we wait and we wait. And when the Pope resigned, that really put a light on in my head. You know, that seemed to be a huge milestone. I mean, but what do you know about this pedophilia ring? I mean, because it seems to be a real organized crime syndicate that the Pope is right at the top of. I hear about similar rings in Hollywood and politics. We had the Jerry Sandusky situation last year. Are these all parts of the same network?
Really, you know, it is. I mean, it isn't necessarily one network, but the way it tends to operate, and we've had more evidence of this, is right within the, and the reason it gets so hidden is because it tends to operate right within the government system of childcare. You know, that people, former insiders have come forward describing how social services and others identify vulnerable mothers. They take their kids, they traffic them. There's a system in Canada, and I don't know about American hospitals, but in Canadian hospitals, if the Catholic priest convinces a young woman who's pregnant to give up her child, there's a thing called the BFA protocol, baby for adoption. She signs away her child when she's still pregnant. That baby is then trafficked, you know, to adoption agencies, orphanages. And there's a lot of money made in the process. So, you know, this trafficking is going on right within our systems of government. And, you know, for every honest person in the system, there's another involved in this. We find dealing, like when you look at corruption in the police forces, people, you know, in that kind of fraternity are conditioned to think, well, we can't rat each other out. We can't be the one, you know, the kind of the Serpico mentality. You got to distrust the honest cop because everybody else might get in trouble, right?
Right.
It's that kind of system very much within the church. Clergy tend to close ranks. Even when they know they're raping kids, they still back each other. And so, you know, that's part of the big problem here, that it's not a few sickos. There was it's a whole system that's very lucrative. There was a really interesting article in a paper called Rock Creek Free Press in Washington, D.C. about 3 years ago. The CIA admitted that as far back as the 1970s, and that probably means earlier too, they were actively and are still actively involved in child trafficking in Thailand as a means to blackmail visiting U.S. congressmen and senators. So, I mean, you know, for the CIA to say, yeah, we do child trafficking, we're involved in this kind of shit. I mean, that's amazing for them to feel they can make that admission, you know, how widespread it is.
Well, we did see on the news not long ago, sometime in 2012, I mean, I saw this Anderson Cooper report. It was pretty jarring, but they said that they found child porn on the computers of over half the staff of the Pentagon. And you hear the story, and then it just gets thrown away. You know, it's like, why even report it? Because you know nothing's going to happen.
Well, you know, that's the thing. I mean, the more power a system has, the more it attracts those elements that know they can get away with literal murder and child rape. You know, and a perfect example of that within the Catholic Church, which your listeners might not know about, is a law which has been in canon law since 1962. It's called Crimen Solicitanus, and it's an order to every priest and bishop in the world that when children are raped in Catholic parishes anywhere, they're to be silenced. The victim silenced and the police not told. Now, that's an order to break the laws of your own country, coming right from Rome. It's a law on the books of the Catholic Church. You can even read it. It's posted on our appendix in hiddennolonger.com. Read paragraph 11. It describes something called the pontifical secret. That's when a child is raped, it's kept secret. Now, that's a criminal conspiracy. Why isn't everyone involved in that facing arrest and trial? But they get away with it, you know, because they're the Vatican. They have a lot of money and political influence.
Yeah, it's a really messed up situation. I mean, people are used to the idea that priests rape kids. Everybody hears about it. Everybody knows about it. And it's just so overlooked. And it's like the most damning thing you can do. I don't understand how it can be overlooked, but it seems to be such a huge part of the Catholic Church, like almost like this whole organization is set up as a front for their real goal of just molesting kids. It's really backwards. But even that law you just said, it's odd that that would be on the books unless this was something that was systematically supposed to happen.
Well, the reality is that child rape is not a crime under the law. It may be a crime in theory, but not in practice. Like the Canadian government, if you can believe this. Now, Stephen Harper, this is one of the reasons he's named in the lawsuit, our common lawsuit. He just, under his government, just last year, the Criminal Code of Canada was altered so that now there's the mandatory sentencing for child rape is only 1 year, which is... It was 5 years earlier. They brought it down to 1 year. Now, why the hell would they make it easy, you know, less of a crime to rape a child than to own a marijuana plant, which gets you 2 to 5? You know, I mean, what does it tell you about the values of these people?
Right. It's like they're skewing the punishments for the crimes that the elites are going to be committing versus the regular Joe Schmoes.
Right. So, you know, I mean, we've come to realize that it's the very people in power who are the enemy. And when you go up, and there's a long tradition, unfortunately, we don't have as much of that tradition in Canada as you have in America, but a long tradition, and it's written right in your constitution, that when the government becomes destructive to the aims of the freedom of the people, that government can be overthrown. And in fact, you know, it isn't just a suggestion. It says it's violating your constitutional rights. Got to be overthrown, people. Now, how you do that is another question, but it doesn't have legitimacy at that point. And that's what people are waking up to, I think, with the church as well.
Mm-hmm. And not to get too weird with this, but outside of the sexual abuse of children, I hear a lot of stories about occult rituals and blood sacrifice. Are these just gross exercises of power, or is there some type of energy aspect to these events? Is there something going on that we don't understand?
Very much. I think that's part of the deeper beast we're facing. And now whether or not, you know, I've seen some very odd things in life, as we all have, but how you interpret it, the reality is the people doing those satanic rituals genuinely believe themselves that they derive energy from the blood of the newborn. Whether in fact that happens, I believe there is a spiritual element there, and there is an energy. It's kind of like a form of energy vampirism.
Yeah.
And I believe that they live off the innocent in that way, definitely. And what better illusion to hide behind than religion in order to achieve that? So, yeah, I think definitely that's at work.
It seems to be like just an interpretation of the old sacrificing the virgin lore.
Yeah, that's true. And when you think about Christianity, all of its violent symbolism, its talk about blood sacrifice, the blood of Christ sacrificed for us, you know, reading up the New Testament scholars, how very... they figure recently there's a group called the Chicago, in Chicago, it's called the Jesus Seminar. And these are probably 100 of the best biblical scholars in the world. They wrote a book 10 years ago that showed that about 87% of the words of Jesus were ascribed to him later. They didn't even come from somebody who might have been named that. And all of that story of the crucifixion, the birth narrative, all of that stuff is made up. I mean, it didn't come from that time and place. And, you know, it's you know, we know about the recycled myth of Osiris and Isis.
Right.
That's well proven. But the thing to understand about the reason the church injected all that violent imagery and ascribed it to Jesus was that it was a way of control. That if you traumatize people at a young age, and this is what's really at the heart of child rape and trafficking and all of these crimes we're documenting, if you traumatize children at a young age, they're not going to resist authority. They don't believe in themselves. They believe they're shameful and weak people. Like everyone who contacts me, the first question they have is, can we do this? Do I have the power to do this? Well, I don't know. I ask them, do you? In yourself, do you feel you have the authority and power to do this? Because we've had that battered out of us. Child abuse is a way to keep a hierarchical society going. And I think that's part of the political reason it keeps going.
You know, I grew up in a Catholic school, and it always seemed very weird to me, the whole rituals. I mean, right down to the Mass itself. I mean, people now are talking about Catholicism being veiled symbolic Satanism. I mean, you know, like the Mass, you're literally paying homage to a human sacrifice, being Jesus on the cross, and then we ceremoniously drink his blood and eat his flesh. I mean, is that not what the elites are doing with real children?
Well put. I think that's exactly the way to condition us to accept those things, and at a minimum, to be so battered emotionally that we lose you know, sensitivity and empathy for that child. You know, that I remember when I was in my 20s and I was very involved for the first time in political activism. When the whole issue of child abuse came up, I had no emotional. I thought, oh, yeah, OK, so like it didn't strike me in my heart the way it did after I had my own children, you know, and you hold your newborn babies and you realize there's something that was happened to us at a young age that we don't feel this innately. Now, there's a good book I'd recommend people read called For Your Own Good by Alice Miller. She's a German psychologist. And she looks into the roots of European child violence and injustice in society. The question she poses is, why are people so acclimatized and do nothing about injustice? Her answer is because we have lost empathy for our own battering that occurred at a young age. And if we don't have empathy for ourselves and what we suffer, we can't for anybody else. And she says every person needs to examine that in their own life. How have we been traumatized? How have we lost that innate wisdom and empathy as a child to live in this kind of brutal society? And so I just kind of plug that because I think we have to do that personal work in order to be able to equip ourselves to carry on this fight over the long run.
And what do you think contributes to that trauma? Because I've heard that the process of the hospital birth itself has some things in it that do that, as well as the circumcision. You know, people talk about it being used for cleanliness, and then there's people who just like it for cosmetic reasons. But apparently the real reason is to traumatize a child without any kind of pain relief, and that this has a real effect on the energy and the soul of the child. I mean, have you looked into that at all?
Oh, well, you know, I've done some reading on that. People have written some really good stuff on that. Absolutely. It's part of the same system. Now, a system is perpetuated not necessarily by conscious act at every step. It's a tradition. People are conditioned to think, oh, well, we just do it. Like, why do you do it? I don't know. My dad did it. Had been my dad, so it's, I guess it should happen to me. That kind of attitude, right?
Right. And I've heard a lot of your interviews preparing for this, and I've read a lot of your recent pieces, and I find you to be a pretty trustworthy guy. And I heard you mention seeing exorcisms and possessions firsthand, which I've always thought of them as hoaxes, but are demon possessions a real phenomenon?
Yeah, I mean, I would say in a minority of cases, the one I witnessed in Puerto Bernie, I would say was genuine because of what it was evoking. Literally, the hair standing up on the back of your head, the sense of a presence that wasn't human. The transformation in the person that happened when that spirit departed. I mean, you know, I had other more personal things that I can't share, but, you know, definitely, you know, seeing this in practice, that there is something at work. You know, physicists say that 90% of the universe can't be observed. It's so-called dark matter and dark energy. Mm-hmm. Well, that means since we're an integral part of the universe, that 90% of us can't be seen or understood. And because that's the fabric of the universe. So this is something that we can get a sense of on other levels of our consciousness, but it's hard to rationally describe, but it has an impact on us nevertheless.
Right. Do you have any idea what causes a demonic possession? Like, what's the mechanism there? Does anybody know?
Well, you know, the movie industry individualizes this. Like, there's a kid and suddenly they're individually possessed, you know, and then individually they're... These systems or spirits work through systems. I believe the nature of possession is that it's collective, it's institutionalized, it's a whole system at work that, you know, there's an example of that in the Bible. There's in the epistles, I don't know if people read the Bible much, but at the latter part of there's the Paul's letter to various churches. And in Greek, he says, he addresses the churches, but he doesn't write them by name. He addresses the angel of the church of Ephesus, the angel of the church of Colossae, etc. And he's referring to kind of the oversoul, the group spirit that conditions all of the thoughts and behavior of everybody in within it. And that's where I think the level of possession occurs, not simply at the individual level, but that collectively. So, for example, you can talk to people who live under a system about the proven crimes of their church or government, and they look at you with blank faces. Their mind is not allowing them to go there because they're under possession, not as individuals, but as part of a collective. And that's where the possession, the exorcism, if you like, needs to be addressed, at the collective spirit. Now, what's proof of that is I went to Rome in October 2009, and I did a little service outside the Vatican, which was very interesting because there's normally police and security all over there. And I stood there and did the service, and nobody, it was kind of like I was invisible. and these police walked right by like I wasn't there. And I thought, oh, this is cool. Okay, so the service turned out to be an exorcism rite, and I've done it twice there. And right after the first exorcism, the next day, a tornado hits the center of Rome, okay? Mm-hmm. And the next thing is that within about a month, the revelations start hitting the European media about Ratzinger. This after the second one, which was, I mean, the first one is the naming ceremony where you tell the spirit to reveal itself, and sure enough, it's revealed, right? Mm-hmm. The second one is the banishment, where you actually tell it to get gone. Now, what's happened in Rome? The Pope is gone. The day he resigned, a lightning bolt hits the cathedral, the Vatican Dome. I mean, there's forces here because we're addressing the collective entity here. We're not just talking about – the issue wasn't Ratzinger at all as a person. I mean, I'm sure if you got him away from all this, he'd be an okay guy. But, you know, within the system, he's part of this thing, and it takes control of him just like it does all of us who operate in these systems. So I would say that that's kind of a clue to how we deal with this, what we're dealing with, and the weapon we have to face it.
Yeah, when you look at some pictures of the Pope, he looks incredibly demonic. It's ridiculous. It's kind of scary how big of a 180 that is from the way he's supposed to look and what you'd expect the leader of a caring, loving organization to look like.
Bingo.
And why do you think it is that some people can reject this program? You know, I've been circumcised. I went through this trauma and a hospital birth. I went to private school for my whole life, and it all, like, it just didn't resonate with me. And there's a lot of friends I have where there just seems to be a blockage there. Do you have any idea why some people can reject it so easily and some just are stuck?
Yeah, well, I mean, we're different. Every soul on the planet is different. Some of us are more open to look at truth than others. Some of us are able to deal with fear and move through it. But I also think we all have a purpose for being here. And those of us who have the purpose of engaging in this battle are armed to do it internally. I mean, we can deal with things. We can go through things more. And you see that in healing circles where people have been through the same trauma. Some people, you know, the trauma is, quote, milder, although I don't want to quantify pain. But they collapse under it. And others who go through incredible hell are able to walk with us into these churches, occupy it, and don't show fear in the face of the very system that tortured them as a young child. So I can't explain why that is, but I do know we're different in that way.
Yeah, as far as healing circles, can you tell us a little bit more about that? Have you seen that work in practice?
Well, it's a hard thing to go through because this word healing is a really cheap political term that they use, you know, and I find working with Native people here, the white society here like to use the word healing as a way to avoid, to say, let's deny this stuff and suppress it and get on with it, not deal with anything. Here, you're healed. Here's $10,000. You're healed. that's what white Canada, how they deal with this genocide that they've done. But actual recovery, I don't think is ever really possible. You can learn to stabilize. You can learn to get to a level of functionability, but you don't ever lose these scars. You know, you learn. They're kind of internalized, and they form part of who you are. But you don't recover. I mean, you don't ever get over this stuff. But what you can do is you can transform, and that's very different than healing. Transforming is you find a higher mind, a higher identity, and that's personally how I've gotten through this, you know, finding that higher identity and purpose.
Well, it seems clear that when you look at Catholicism and everything they're involved in, the Catholic hierarchy, the people who actually work for the organization, there's no way they can believe their own religion because they're stealing money, raping kids. So clearly they don't think there's going to be eternal hellfire waiting for them. But what's your take on the entire Christian faith now that you've seen such corruption within it? Has it affected your own faith?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I never really believed in Big C Christianity, even as a minister. I think organized religion is very different than spirituality. I mean, spirituality comes from within us. I mean, you know, Jesus saying the kingdom of heaven is within you. He wasn't talking about a church or a pope, you know.
Right.
He's talking that spiritual equality that we're all born with innately. But the thing about Christianity, I mean, it depends what you're talking about, what kind of. It's like when you say democracy, well, it's a word people kick around, but have you ever really seen it? Not according to the Greek notion of democracy was that citizens had the right to remove rulers and do take them to court whenever they wanted and to speak in the assembly. That's not the democracy we live under. You know, just like Christianity, it wasn't meant to be a religion. It was meant to be a way of life, of equality and justice and caring and love. And people like to say they're doing that, but they can't within these institutions. And I learned that the hard way, that when you try to practice Christianity in the Christian churches, your time is limited, put it that way.
Now, aside from all the child abuse, there also seems to be some serious crimes going on with money at the Vatican Bank. Can you shed some light on that at all? Because we're not getting it from the media, the traditional media.
No, well, you know, the Vatican Bank, first of all, is the most secret organization on the planet. You can't audit it. You can't know who the directors are. They destroy their records every 5 years. And it's a money laundering system for the mob. I mean, that's been known for decades. The last pope who tried to do something about that got poisoned in office in 1978, John Paul I. But the Vatican Bank was set up by the dictator Mussolini. Because in 1929, he reestablished, the Vatican didn't exist in 1870. From 1870 to 1929, the Garibaldi, they disestablished the Church of Rome and the Pope was a prisoner. The Catholic Church had no power. Well, Mussolini fixed that in 1929. He reestablished the Vatican, made Catholicism the national religion of Italy, and created the Vatican Bank and something called the Lateran Treaty, where basically it said the government and the Church of Rome are one in the same body. The Vatican Bank operates as the most secret corrupt financial institution on the planet. And that's why even the Bank of America, the American Security and Exchange Commission warned people that the Vatican Bank is not trustworthy. It's not a transparent institution. And that's one of the reasons that its credit is drying up and it's in extreme crisis. And that's probably one of the reasons Ratzinger took the fall on this and stepped down.
See, I've heard that it's in crisis, and I've heard that their credit's been revoked, but don't you feel like they probably have enough wealth in there to sustain them for probably a few generations?
They do. I mean, they get $50 billion alone probably out of the collection plate every year. But don't forget, who are they in debt to? Who do they owe? If without the right information, we can't know. That's the reality. None of these records are known except by inside cardinals. And you've heard rumors about there being a lot of Arab oil money, Chinese, just like in America with the Chinese buying up the U.S. debt, all of that stuff. We can't really know, but we can know indirectly by their actions or what they don't do. And there is a good website, concordatwatch.eu. Concordats are treaties between the Vatican and other governments. Well, they're not a government, but they'd like to pretend they are. A financial concordat is when the taxpayers' money from countries is actually channeled right in the Vatican Bank. And apparently there's over 100 countries with these financial concordats, including America. So I don't know if your listeners know, but whether you like it or not, your taxpayers' money is going to – the money you pay to the U.S. government is partly being channeled into the Vatican Bank.
Oh, man. Yeah, there's a lot of crimes being carried out on taxpayer dollars these days.
But it might be curious. People might ask your local congressman, do you know anything about a financial concordat? And just watch them say no, because they don't know, probably.
Right. What was the story we saw last year with the Pope's butler?
A cover story.
What happened there? Apparently, he tried to get some documents out.
Well, no. His name is Paolo Gabriel. He was a butler, right? The close attendant of the Pope. And he, according to the Italian press, he went into the Pope's personal stuff and got his diary and sent excerpts of it to an Italian reporter. The reporter just happened to be buddies with Cardinal Bertone of the Secretary of State's office, who actually is the one who released these documents, because the stuff that incriminated the Pope had to do with Vatican Bank records that only the Secretary of State could have accessed. The butler couldn't have. These, according to people I've talked to in Italy, these records refer to the fact that the Pope was channeling Vatican money and contracts to family and friends in Germany and other insiders in Rome. And Bertone used that as a lever to get Ratzinger out, to take the fall for some of this stuff. Bertone was the kingmaker. I mean, he was the power behind Ratzinger, and he's the guy who's now appointing the new Pope, probably. So, I mean, it's, you know, that really, that whole thing about the butler is their Lee Harvey Oswald story, right?
Oh, yeah, that makes a lot of sense now. It's also, there's a lot of rumors and talk about the church's involvement with World War II and the Nazis and helping the Nazis shield some of their wealth away and helping them, you know, before they were taken out. Can you shed some light on that at all?
Well, that's well documented. Best book to read on that is The Fourth Reich by Jim Mars, M-A-R-R-S. Mm-hmm. You can get it at any bookstore, The Fourth Reich by Jim Mars. He documents the Vatican rat lines, they were called. The Dominicans, and Ratzinger was a Dominican, by the way. The Dominicans were set up to do the Inquisition back 800 years ago. But the Dominicans brought out hundreds of Nazis through the Vatican, through Italy and then Portugal and then over to South America. They also were brought out through England, through the Catholic Church there to Canada and then down to the States through this thing called Project Paperclip.
Yes. Yeah.
You might have heard about the rocket scientist, you know, the SS Major Werner von Braun, the guy who set up the NASA space medicine program, an Auschwitz doctor, SS doctor called Strughold. I mean, it goes on and on, but hundreds and hundreds of Nazis were brought in through the Vatican rat lines. Klaus Barbie, people who worked for the CIA because of the whole Eastern European spy network Reinhard Gehlen had. Reinhard Gehlen set up the CIA and established the whole Cold War policy in the State Department. So, you know, America really was Nazified after World War II. And America's really now doing what Hitler pioneered, which is the corporate military industrial state, the permanent arms economy and state. And that's what America's become. So that's why, you know, the Nazis didn't actually lose the war. They just morphed.
Yeah, I've been hearing that more and more. And you mentioned the CIA, and a lot of people are familiar with the MKUltra mind control program. There's a lot of speculation that they've been getting victims through the Catholic Church or getting guinea pigs through the Catholic Church. Have you found any documentation of coercion between the CIA and the Catholics?
Oh, again, there's a lot of that documented through MKUltra. The Catholic Church was one of the main groups in Canada and the U.S. providing kids for experimental purposes. Often kids from military families were used. I was interviewing Native people here on the West Coast. At the Cooper Island Catholic Residential School, they talked about Nazi doctors showing up, German-speaking doctors, both before and after World War II. One woman even in Alberta even saw the SS tattoo on the arm of one of these doctors, who she thought was Joseph Mengele. But they were doing exactly the same experiments the Nazis pioneered at Auschwitz, the decompression chamber experiments, the eye color alteration. All of that stuff was going on in Indian hospitals and schools. You know, probably one of the reasons the Canadian government sealed the records for the Indian hospitals in 1999. But, you know, this stuff is really well documented.
Yeah, I mean, they seem to be involved with every corrupt organization. I mean, there's even some shady dealings going on with the pharmaceutical industry. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah. Well, the Vatican has a lot invested in big pharma. They have had historical deals with pharmaceutical companies going back to at least World War II for using Catholic schools, Indian residential schools, orphanages as drug testing grounds. The big pharma, like Eli Lilly, the pharmaceutical giant, funds American churches through what's called the Fund for Theological Education. It funds the seminaries where priests and ministers are trained. You know, there's been long ties between big pharma and these churches.
You know, people look at this and, you know, they're involved in CIA mind control programs, the pharmaceutical industry and drug testing. They're involved in all this stuff. It seems so huge. There'd have to be so many people involved, and to not have any whistleblowers on that or to have them all swept under the rug seems, you know, it just seems like they've been incredibly lucky. And is this court case the real thing that's going to blow the lid off all this?
Well, you know, it's another spark. I try to tell people that, you know, we've got limited resources here because we're not backed by anybody big. We just have people, and we're a spark. The best we can do is spark conditions that hopefully will exist so that the fire spreads. That means people taking this and running it with them themselves. The reason that there aren't a lot of whistleblowers around on this, well, the truth is there were, and there are all the time, but how do you hear about them? You hear about it, fortunately, through the internet. This is how I've got my story out over 20 years, the alternative media and the internet. You can forget the corporate media altogether. the main so-called mainstream. We're the mainstream. I mean, American public radio has 20 million listeners now. Mm-hmm. Although NPR has corporate funding in that, you've got to be careful about that. But you know, the fact is that there are these people all over who know the truth, and a lot of my work is trying to link up those people. But there are honest people trying to do the right thing, unfortunately, in these institutions. But they get whistleblowers tend to get treated in the same way. There's a manual somewhere of how corporations deal with them. And that's one of the things I'll be writing about. I've done a little bit of work on this, but it's really important to reach out and help those people who are still trying to do the right thing in there.
Obviously, the Catholic Church has a long history of accusations and cover-ups, and there's a lot of speculation as to what information they may really hold in the Vatican archives and the Vatican vaults. Do you have any information about the information they may be holding?
Well, just hearsay. I've seen some references in documents here and there. But, you know, for example, there was a woman here in Vancouver Island who said she had an uncle who was a senior cardinal from Quebec. And she met him in Rome, and he took her in there. This would have been the late 1960s. And she saw what was in the Vatican archives. She said it was state-of-the-art, military-protected facility where she was seeing things like skulls, you know, bone collections, and an area the size of a football field, she said.
Wow.
Old arcane-like documents and books showing records of anyone ever tortured by an Inquisition. She also said he mentioned an archaeological expedition that the Vatican sponsored in Cyprus in the late 50s that had found solid proof of Jesus as a man, as a rabbi, which contradicted all church teachings, and so they buried all that. So, I mean, all of that is very conceivable, and it's a matter of getting in there, and that's, I think, eventually with enough support in that, including insider support, that might be possible, but who knows at this point? I mean, they're obviously heavily guarded.
Right. There's all kinds of weird stories about secret technologies. You know, the fact that the Great Pyramids were there for some type of power plant or some type of energy creation, and that the Vatican knows this information and they have a lot of stuff in their vaults. It would be amazing to blow that open. And if there's a seizure of assets, I assume that would happen. But I mean, what is the next step in this case? What is the next event to take place? The crowning of a new pope?
Well, yeah, their conclave is supposed to begin on March 15th. And that's when all the cardinals get together and vote on a new pope. Who it is, I think, is not really that important. He's a figurehead anyway.
Right.
Right.
The power is definitely, it's got a problem, these guys. The very fact, for example, this Keith O'Brien, who's a cardinal in England, top Catholic Church guy in England, stepped down and said he wasn't going to go to Rome to vote at the conclave. Well, every cardinal is supposed to under canon law, and yet they feel free now to say, well, no, I'm not going to. That kind of independence means people are feeling they need to leave the sinking ship, and it wouldn't surprise me if bishops in various countries decide to break off from Rome or at least have more autonomy. So I think we're seeing a repeat of stuff that happened in the Reformation 500 years ago. But this time we've got to make it more complete. We've got to say, you know, we've got to get this corporation all together.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of pressure on them, it seems, that when you look at these little clues like the Pope stepping down and the Queen canceling her trip. It seems like there is real pressure, but we're just kept in the dark because the media obviously is in bed with them and refuses to report on it.
We've got a lot of good sources, and that's people within the church. I mean, you know, like we do know honest people. And I use that word qualified because I don't think if someone's really honest and they know this information that actually stay in these churches. But anyway, there are people within the churches who have been providing information to myself and other people like in Italy and in Europe. Now, don't forget, this is the oldest and one of the smartest corporations on the planet. They're masters of deception. And, you know, they have a whole way they operate, which is smoke and mirrors. So you got to sort through a lot of this evidence take it with a grain of salt where it's coming from. Like there's this thing called the prophecy of Malachi. I don't know if you've heard about it, but people are claiming, oh, this is the last pope of his prophesied.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And he's number 110 or something. Well, the trouble with that figure is that it leaves out a number of things in papal history. At one point, there were two or three rival popes in the 14th century. They excommunicated each other. And there's more than 111. There was Pope Joan in the 10th century, who a woman from England who became pope for a couple of weeks. And then they found out she was a woman and they killed her. And so, I mean, and her name was eradicated from church history. So, I mean, that number is off. And so, you know, you got to be careful about papal documents. They're often forgeries. Like another example is the Pope claims that he's the ruler of the world and has for centuries, according to a document called the Donation of Constantine, whereby the emperor was supposed to have granted all the wealth and property of the Roman Empire to the Vatican. Well, Constantine lived in the 4th century. This document was proven to have been written in the 10th. So, I mean, you know, it's at every level, it's forgery. I mean, even their Bible and everything, most of it is made up. So it's you got to really be careful when you're looking at church sources.
What are your thoughts on prophecy and, like, universal cycles? Because people say, you know, after 2012, we're entering a new age and lies are supposed to be more transparent. And then you see this happening, you know, right after this time, you know, right when people have prophesied that it would happen. I mean, is there some kind of universal energy that's affecting all this, or do you think it's just coincidence?
Well, in this stuff, I don't think there's coincidences. I think that there's definitely something in work. I'm trying to kind of get a better handle on that. But what you can definitely say is that it's a time of real shifting. And you see it in behavior everywhere. You know, the people who are kind of caught in the whole fear, the old fear paradigm, which is how masses of people are controlled.
Right.
They're going to stay there. But those who are, everything is energy. I mean, physicists tell us that everything is what energy you're vibrating on, right?
Mm-hmm.
And people who are standing more in the light of truth and love and reason, they're not touched by that. And they're the ones, I mean, I just got an email from a guy in Munich, Germany, which was great because it's Ratzinger's hometown. He walked into a church, 500 people were there, and he starts yelling at the top of his lungs about how the Pope is a criminal. And they chase him out of there and everything. But that's the kind of courage, you know, that person, like I often hear from Native people, it's not so much what might happen to us if we do it, but what's going to happen if we don't do it? Mm-hmm. What children suffer tomorrow because of this if we don't act? And that's really the different vibration to be living in, not fear, but resolve and love and courage. And that's what we have to rely on to get us through.
Well, what do you think are some concrete things people can do? Because, you know, when the Occupy movement happened, we were out in the streets, we were trying, and then the crackdown happened and everybody had to go back to work. I mean, people are broke. They're stuck working 40 hours a week. They got to get to work. They don't really have the time to make a serious stand. They've got us by the balls, kind of. You know, what can people do?
Well, that's the problem. Is my wife, Carol, often talks to me about this. They have people trapped as wage slaves, not just physically, but mental wage slaves. And you're caught in a system of debt slavery by the time you're, what, 21 now?
Right.
In America,
right.
Canada. As long as people operate within that system, you're right, you're constrained. But the point is, we don't have to operate in that system. And I had it easier because I got tossed out of a lot of security and I had to make do some other way. I had to learn this. But when people have the option of staying within the comforts of the system, it's really hard to get them to see that we need to make a real total. So we need to build up ways of helping each other do that. We're living under conditions of war. We're all, our planet and all of us are facing literal extermination. We have to realize that we have to join that battle, and that has to be our highest priority. And if it only to protect our children and the ones who are to come. So it's shifting our priorities. It's finding ways to survive. It isn't so much a matter of physically confronting the system, because if you take all that energy and detach from the system, you're actually having more of an impact. Cut up your credit card, close your bank account, stop going to these stores, stop voting, stop paying taxes. The system will be affected a lot more than a simple protest. And don't forget, the act of protesting itself is based on the idea that there's a system that's going to respond. We're making a demand and leaving the initiative in the hands of the rulers. Now, that's inherently disabling, and I know from having done this for decades, you know, when you go on protest, there's an inevitable letdown after, because people are thinking, well, what do we achieve? Okay, but then you're building an alternative, you know, communities for survival, and you're doing something to create something new. That's very different. and it builds. It's an ongoing thing. This is why we say with the arrest warrants, it isn't something that's going to happen just tomorrow. We're going to arrest their system. And arrest, of course, is French word to stop. You know, stopping mm-hmm. something so that something new can come about. So I don't know. I think that that's important for people to realize, you know, in all this work.
Right. There are a lot of talks right now of new systems, of moneyless systems. One of my previous guests was Jacques Fresco, who does the Venus Project. I don't know if you're familiar with that. But there seems to be a lot of talk of the monetary system as a whole. There isn't really a way to fine-tune that it is just a mechanism for wage slaves. And then you got the church on the other hand that is doing a lot of the mental prisons that people are stuck in. What are some steps? You know, you got somebody who's in their mid-20s, they're going to work, they're not happy, they're not making a lot of money, they're a couple thousand in debt. They feel kind of isolated by this. What are some concrete ways they can start to detach? Like, it just seems like you're trapped.
Well, knowledge is power, first of all. Learn these things about alternatives and what you're really living under. But also, you find two or three other people in your neighborhood. You got to start local because that's what people can fight for. I agree with the slogan, think globally, because nobody can think globally. You can have a sense of things, but what you know is your own circumstance, your own neighborhood, your own life, your own family and community. So you get together with people there and discuss, okay, how do we do something like open a community garden where we don't have to go? I mean, the fruit is rotting on the ground around us.
Right.
We can
right.
go to that fruit and feed each other. And one detachment has happened. We don't have to go anymore. Stop paying taxes, okay? Under international law, you're obligated not to pay taxes to a government that's committed war crimes, which is the U.S. government is doing that right now as we speak. You're supported in international law by doing that. You know, say to your the people you vote for, well, I can't vote for you anymore because who do you really represent? I mean, all of these things are the important thing is to start doing them and keep doing them because it's by keeping doing something that you learn and you grow stronger together.
True. I agree. And on the issue of not paying taxes, I mean, the Aaron Russo put out a movie a few years ago, Freedom to Fascism, and it was all about how there are, you know, the payroll tax that you're not supposed to have to pay. It's not anywhere legally on the books. No politician can really point to an area of the code that says you have to pay this. Obviously, the tax code is way too convoluted for anyone to even read. But, you know, you're going to get thrown in jail. You know, you're going to get put away. It doesn't seem to really matter what's on paper when there's such a strong perception that you got to pay this shit or you're going to jail.
One of my American heroes is Henry Thoreau, who wrote Walden. And in the 1840s, he wouldn't pay taxes, 1850s actually, because it was going to fund the Mexican-American War. And he went to jail. And Emerson, the American writer, came in and said, Ralph, what are you doing in jail? And he said, he said, Henry, what are you doing in jail? He said, Ralph, what are you doing not in jail? It's kind of like civil disobedience is one thing, but we're not any laws by this. It's the American government that's breaking the international law by funding illegal wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, by allowing child raping criminal bodies like the Vatican to operate openly with taxpayer-supported money in America. Those are all crimes under international law. You're obligated, everyone listening is obligated not to fund crime. And that's what we mean about taking back the law. The law is being used against us. That's why citizens have to take it back. Common law courts. You guys can set up a common law court in your community with 12 sworn jurors. We're going to put out a manual about how to do that and judge for yourselves in your community what's right. There's a difference between something being legal, which is a statute brought in by a government, and something that's lawful. A lawful law is one that squares with natural law, which we all know about inherently. That's what the Founding Fathers said. We have an inherent right because we know innately what's right and wrong.
Right.
A legal statute doesn't square with the natural law of justice. It can be ignored and should be ignored. And when the police come and arrest you, say, let me see your oath of office. You're sworn to protect the Constitution. There's a group called the Oath Keepers in the American military and police and sheriffs that are, you should check out if you don't know about that already. They're saying there's 10 pledges they're asking every soldier and policeman and sheriff to take. And that is, we will not do any measure to violate the Constitution or the rights of American citizens, you know, and that's what we need. The people are, the forces are to serve the people, not be a hammer over them.
And well said. It's getting about to be about that time. Tell us about this Easter Reclamation events that are coming up on March 24th.
Well, we're, as part of the common law of citizen arrest warrants, we're urging people to peacefully occupy, take back these church properties, especially the Catholic Church. During Easter week, that's the 24th to the 31st, Easter Sunday is March 31st, we're going to be doing occupations, teach-ins, sit-ins, and more exorcisms, spiritual, to bring down this corrupt institution, the oldest one in history. So if people want to see itccs.org, or you can write to me, hiddenfromhistory1@gmail.com. I'm, again, coming down the West Coast in the summer, and I'd love to come, and I will be coming to San Diego, L.A., the Bay Area, all over California. So let's plan some events.
Absolutely. And you briefly mentioned an exorcism, because people are in some type of trance state. I mean, that's pretty common. But are people having effects from going under some type of exorcism on a wide scale?
I think it's definitely having, you know, one way you could look at all of this is that it is a massive exorcism that's having an impact. Look at the behavior of these people. They're supposed to be the most powerful people on the planet, and they're hiding out in their palaces like frightened criminals, which is who they are. So that's not the behavior of somebody in charge. It means that from within, there's something happening where they're losing their power, and that can only happen spiritually. And that's why I know that we have the high ground, and that's why we're going to keep it.
Well said. And as this pressure gets more on the doorstep of the Queen of England, of the Prime Minister of Canada, of the Pope, are arrests going to be made? Are we going to see that soon?
Yes. I know that the number gathering that is certainly going to be attempted, and even if you don't physically detain these people, rulers keep their power through legitimacy. And once, you know, the Prime Minister and others are running around hiding from citizen arrest warrants, they look like fools, and they might as well be under arrest if they're hiding out in their system. So I think there's a lot of ways to look at this. It doesn't require, you know, you win or lose according to whether you physically grab the guy. I mean, that's not what this is about.
Right. You got to shatter the perception.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, Kevin, I know you got another interview coming up. I don't want to keep you too long. It's been a great chat. I'm glad you could give us some real info about what's happening here. Is there anything else you'd like to inform the people on before we go? Maybe your websites?
Again, it's hiddennolonger.com for the issue of evidence of genocide in Canada and our film on Repentant. And the tribunal website is itccs.org. And that's all of our latest updates. You can see a copy of the arrest warrant today if you go to that, itccs.org. And write to me at hiddenfromhistory1@gmail.com. And hopefully see you in July when I come down.
Absolutely. Thanks again. I really admire your courage and hard work. I wish you the best of luck. I'll be pulling for you all the way. And hopefully we can start to tear down these corrupt organizations starting at the top.
Thanks a lot, Greg. I'll talk to you soon about July.
Alrighty, thank you. Have a good one.
Bye for now.
Bye. There you have it, people. Kevin Annette doing what he can to bring down the man. Thanks for listening. You know the drill. I'm selling t-shirts over at conspiratees.net, and I'm writing Bernie Madoff letters on the off days. No response yet, unfortunately. Keep sharing the show and helping it grow, and I'll see you next week. Now that Pope Benedict, a.k.a. Joseph Ratzinger, is stepping down and the heat is on, I figured he must be feeling pretty low. So, Ratzinger, this one's for you.
I wish you would step back from that ledge, my friend. You could cut ties with all the lies that you've been living in. And if you do not want to see me again, I would understand. Yeah.